Hi, everybody. This is Ann Wilson, and this is Iron City Rocks.
This is Artemis Pyle from Lynyrd Skynyrd, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hey, this is Derek St. Holmes from the Whitford St. Holmes Band or the Ted Nugent Band, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hello and welcome to episode 557 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 557, very pleased to welcome to the show a man who helped define rock and roll in the 1970s in the United States, Mark Farner, who was one of the catalysts of Grand Funk Railroad, who had a slew of gold, platinum, double platinum albums, as well as several high chart-topping hits like We're an American Band, The Locomotion, Some Kind of Wonderful, just to name some of the massive highlights. Mark will be coming in to do a show with his American Band. He's no longer part of Grand Funk Railroad, obviously, though essential to their DNA, but he's coming in to do a show in Jurgles on the 26th of June, so we wanted to get a chance to talk to Mark. He's got a new album, relatively new, called Closer to My Home, that's available now, and we wanted to talk to him about that record, working with Mark Slaughter, who is not a name that you would necessarily think of when you think of Grand Funk Railroad, but Mark Slaughter of the band Slaughter, obviously, and Vinnie Vincent Invasion, worked with him on the album. So we're going to play you a track off of that album, and then we'll get into that interview with Mark. The track is called Anymore, from the album Closer to My Home.
When I was young, I listened to the words of men, but that was then, and I won't listen to them anymore. They told me things I should believe, but all it did was make me grieve, so I
yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome to the show founder of Grand Funk Railroad. We have on the line Mr. Mark Farner. How are you doing today?
Good, Brother John. I'm ready to rock.
Which is awesome to hear. You are going to be traveling into Pittsburgh to do a show with your American band on the 26th at Jurgles. Obviously, I think people hear your name and synonymous with all the hits of Grand Funk Railroad. Obviously, not touring as such, but you know that's the business of music these days. You had a fantastic record come out late last year, Closer to My Home. Can you talk a little bit about those songs? I mean, obviously, you did a, I don't want to call it a cover of Closer to Home, but
I did a remake.
Yeah, that's a better way to say it, because I hate it when you look at like Setlist FM and they'll report that you do a cover of a song. Like, you wrote the damn thing. It's not a cover.
You know, right.
It's like John Fogerty. You're not doing covers of your own songs.
That's right.
So can you talk a little bit about, let's say, the new songs on that album?
Yeah, the album is Closer to My Home, kind of identifying my, you know, instead of back in 1970 when I released Closer to My Home, you know, with Grand Funk Railroad. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I wrote 92 and 94% of the Grand Funk Railroad song. Mm-hmm. So I have every right to be doing those songs. And
sure.
I am. And on this Closer to My Home album, and it is a vinyl album. We released it in red vinyl. And we released a CD that has a bonus track of Jim Peterick and myself, who are writing Friends Forever. It's we wrote it, and I loved it. I said, I want to put it on my album. He said, I want to put it on. I said, why don't we both put it on our albums?
Nothing wrong with that.
No, man. So we did. And on his album, it's kind of a duet thing. We're tossing it back and forth. On my album, it's just me. And I'm playing bass on the cut. And anyways, we've got a lot of good comments on that song. It brings healing. It brings the feeling of love. It restores something that is a reunion type feeling, like you're going to a family reunion, brother, or coming home after a long damn trip.
Yeah, something you can identify with.
Yeah. So we're very proud of that. And also on the, you know, the nine songs that are on the album itself, Closer to Home is like the last cut. And it's, this whole album is different in that it's not in the new American tuning standard for the United States that was changed in 1953 by Rockefeller.
Okay.
It's in the old standard tuning of 432 instead of 440.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in 432. 432 is part of the solfeggio scale. And it happens to be a natural frequency that is an absolutely astounding, even physically, to watch it, to see what it does. It's love in action, man. So I'm all my songs, I've been playing this way for nearly 20 years in 432. All my live shows, even when I went out on the Hippie Fest and Happy Together and some of the tours that we played, where I was a special guest along with, you know, Dave Mason and Rick Derringer, right. God rest his soul.
Yeah.
This song, all of these songs, but I'm Your Captain in 432 has a more reaching ability to reach into your heart. And that's what I've got from the people, the feedback from people who said, man, I'm not sure you should have recut the anthem. I mean, why would you do something like that? You know, because people told me, they said, Well, you know, we've heard other people recut their music and it just, wow, they should never have touched it. But this, and I've got nothing but good comments on it, this is something that's special. I ended up, you know, I played bass on the cut, and it just so happens that the bass lines that Mel played, I wrote a lot of them. Because I hear the bass. When I'm writing music, I hear the bass. I hear I hear the keyboards. I hear everything the way I, you know, I envision it, the way I imagine. So, there's the single that's out now anymore, which is the lead song, side A, first song, Anymore, is a song about forgiveness. It's all about, you know, being aware and being beware. Because it's like the lyrics in the first verse, when I was young, I listened to the words of men, but that was then, and I won't listen to them anymore. They told me things I should believe, but all that did was make me grieve, so I won't listen to them anymore. And then it goes on to say, in the beginning, it was me and my band. It's sad to say that we don't play together anymore. It's not the quantity, it's the honesty, my friends. The story ends, and I'm not angry with them anymore. So, and we rock it. You know, it's in 4-3-2, and it's got, you know, Mark Slaughter's production. His hands are on it. He, in fact, wrote this one song with me. He co-wrote it. At the time we were cutting it, he made some suggestions, and I said, those are great suggestions. I want to make sure you get a half writer's credit for this. Oh, man, you don't have to do that. I said, yes, I do. Are you kidding me? Yes, I do. So there's a lot of love in it, man, a lot of love in this whole record. And I'm thinking that, you know, because it's so diverse as far as the styles, but it's totally me. You know, it's my voice and my harmonies, and also Slaughter sang some harmonies. Slaughter played some guitar and bass and drums, and you know, between the two of us and there's three other drummers on the total of the songs that are there, that are just great drummers. The guy who played on Closer to Home did a tempo map of the original song and played to that map, because back then, Brother John, we didn't have a click.
No, not at all.
No such thing as a click track. You played to the drummer. You played like a band. Amazing.
pray the drummer can keep the tempo the whole way through the song.
Yeah, man.
How did you cross paths with Mark? I mean, you guys kind of come from obviously different genres to a degree. I mean, Mark, an amazing musician. But how did you guys kind of cross paths?
Well, we were at Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp in New York City.
Okay.
Slaughter was there along with some other rockers, you know, because David Fischoff, who owns the camp, runs the camp, came to me and he said, hey, Howard Stern wants you to come over to his studio this afternoon and do I'm Your Captain live on the air. And I said, like, how does he want it? Like acoustic, or, you know, does he want the band? He says, man, take the fantasy band. Are you kidding me? Take the fantasy band. So we had Kip Winger on bass, Sandy Gennaro from Joan Jett and the Blackhearts on drums. We had Teddy Zigzag from Guns N' Roses on the keyboards. We had Bruce Kulick on acoustic guitar, Mark Slaughter on second, me on first, and we went and played this song, man. And I was listening to those guys sing the harmony parts with me, and I was getting goosebumps while we were doing it, because it was just so good, you know, to play with professional musicians who have listened to your stuff, who are having a blast. Playing with you, you know. It was just good vibes. So Mark told me, he says, hey, I'm going to send you some songs. I want you to give them a listen. And he sent me, you know, emailed me some of these songs. And I got on the phone. I called him and I said, hey, these songs, whoever the producer is, I love the production on this stuff. He said, that's me. I produced them. I said, you're kidding me. No, man, this is good stuff. He said, I tell you what I want to do. I want to produce you. Whatever you're doing right now, let's put it down. Let me produce it, and let's release something together. And that's how we started it off, brother. It was just kind of sent from heaven.
Yeah, and that's an awesome, you know, kind of a full circle moment for a lot of those guys you mentioned. Many of them have joined us on the show over the years. And, you know, the influence that your work in Grand Funk had on that generation, even though maybe not so obvious, but, you know, and the musicianship of those guys, then to kind of get the opportunity to come back and work with you. It's a wonderful kind of symbiotic story, you know, to hear that. And the production, you know, the songwriting on the album is tremendous. So it's
thank you.
It's one of those things where it's almost, I dare to say this, you've got so many hits in your catalog. It's almost a shame that you couldn't, like, you know, wedge in the entire album in your show. But I imagine that would cause a riot. If you know, what do you take out of your set? You know, I can't, you know, that's not an easy thing. Are you able to get any of this material into the live set? You know, I realize, you know, people come to see you, they say the name on the marquee and they expect, you know,
yeah,
at least half a dozen songs, you know, they demand from you.
Mm-hmm. But I've done some of these live. I've done Real Live, and I've done, you know, the hit, we're praying for this hit, Anymore, the lead song on the album. And people embrace it. I mean, they're really loving this music. It's like, holy cow, man. That's a good song.
Yeah.
I did it on this rock cruise back in, it was October, I think, we did the cruise. And people loved it. They said, what is that new song you're doing there? And I said, yeah, that's up from the new album. You should get one. You should get one of those albums.
We'll have that for you at the merch booth. Yes, yeah. I mean, it's tough, and it's a good problem to have, and a tough problem. You know, any artist with your resume, you know, at this point, to try to get people to want to hear new music, you know, it's not unusual for bands that may have seven or eight albums that will only play tracks from the first two, because those were the two that were big.
Yeah,
but it's sometimes, you know, for the people who have come to see you tour after tour, it's a real treat, because, you know, sometimes it breaks up the predictability of the show, and these are just good songs. I mean, you know, that's I think the real bottom line is that you as a songwriter continue to get better through the years. Why not flex that muscle, you know?
Thank you, bro.
I applaud that. So with your live set, I know you've done much beyond just Grand Funk Railroad. When folks do come to see you, for those who haven't seen you, how much of your solo material versus, you know, kind of the Grand Funk classics that you wrote are you able to do, just to get an idea?
Oh, we only do just a couple. Most of the Grand Funk. This is why people come to see me.
And, yeah.
And I'm not kidding myself. I know that,
yeah,
you know, hey, I'm glad that they're coming to see me. I'm glad that they still like Some Kind of Wonderful. They still like Locomotion. They still like Bad Time to Be in Love. They still like Rock and Roll Soul, Foot Stomping Music. You know, there's a lot of songs that people, man, when we get done playing them, it's like they really show their appreciation, brother.
Are there songs over the years that you have kind of grown to like even more than maybe when you wrote them, just because of, you know, the fact that, you know, you some of these songs, I imagine you could play, you know, half asleep. You've played them so many times, but the reaction you get from the crowd, you know, and you know, I think people, especially post-COVID, were so deprived for live music that I think, you know, people started coming out more and more. Are there songs that you kind of enjoy playing more now than you did?
Yeah. Heartbreaker's one. Because the reaction we get to Heartbreaker, and by the way, brother, Heartbreaker was the first song I'd ever written. I wrote it when I was 18 years old because Dick Wagner, guitar player, of course, for Alice.
Absolutely.
He told me I could write songs. I asked him one night, we're setting up playing our electric guitars with not plugged in, you know, just he's showing me some chord inversions and instructing me. And I just came out and I said, Wagner, man, how do you write all of these songs? How the hell, where do you get this stuff? And he reaches over, he takes his finger and he points right at my heart. He says, they're right there. Right there, Farner. They are right in there, and you can write them. You can write songs just like I'm writing songs. All you got to do is get in touch with what's right there. And he went to bed. We were at his apartment in Saginaw, Michigan. His wife and two kids are sleeping, and it's like 3:30 in the morning, something. He says, I'm going to, you know, turn in. And so he turned in, and I stayed up and wrote Heartbreaker. And for me to play that nowadays and to for especially, oh, my God, South America, man, I play that song in South America, and the audience sings it louder than I'm singing it on the PA, dude.
Yeah, that's a special. Is it, you know, you speak of writing from your heart, and are there times, you know, when you're making records, especially in the early days when you guys were really turning out albums, you know, the 70s, the 80s, albums had to be made fast, you know? Yeah. So it were there times where there are some songs that you maybe look back and think, you know, I really didn't give 100% of my heart to that one. It was more of a formula, or, you know, I wish I could go back and retool that one a little bit, or you didn't try not to dwell on that kind of stuff.
No, I didn't, because they were coming, the songs were coming so fast, so complete, that I don't have any regrets as far as what I, you know, we put down and what I was working with at the time. I was 20 years old when Grand Funk started, man. Yeah. You know, 15 when I started playing guitar, 20 when we had our first million selling album. So it was happening really fast, brother.
Yeah, that's almost staggering. I think, you know, a lot of people, 15 is probably in that sweet spot of when a lot of people pick up a guitar, but 20 is not nearly the spot where a lot of people sell a million records.
Yeah.
So something good was happening in those 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Did you take up singing is preceded the guitar, or did the guitar kind of lend itself then to picking up vocal duties? How did that kind of progress for you as a student of music?
Well, I was in school, I was in the choir. I loved singing. I loved to hear people sing.
Mm-hmm.
I loved to be around people who are singing. I like to sing with people who are singing and get, you know, get that blend of voices going. And, and it feeds something within my soul, brother.
Yeah, I think probably didn't hurt coming from Michigan. I mean,
yeah,
no shortage of just amazing. Were there particular singers? You know, there's obviously a certain bit of soul in your work. I mean, do the particular singers like a Sam Cooke or anybody kind of sprinkle into you as an influence in particular?
Biggest influence on me, actually, brother, is Howard Tate. And when I heard Howard Tate, man, the first time, I went, holy crap, this dude can sing. He got so much control and so much expression. I would sit and listen to his album, Get It While You Can, with my eyes closed and just use my imagination and listen to him. And that really, really fed me. And it influenced me. It gave me some chops listening to him and trying to emulate what he was doing. Part of my, you know, I loved Aretha Franklin, Little Stevie Wonder. There was a lot of people that I admired, but Howard Tate was my dude, man. He was the stuff, man.
That's excellent. I feel there was no shortage of just amazing music, you know, kind of in what you would peg your formative years to really. I'm almost envious of, you know, growing up a number of years later that we did, you know, I mean, obviously you could go back and find those records, but, you know, to be there in the day when a lot of that stuff came out, some great stuff. Well, Mark, I want to thank you again so much for your time and letting us pick your brain today. You're going to be here on the 26th to do a show at Jurgles in Warrendale. I'm sure the place will be packed. We'll be expecting the hits. And I urge everyone to get a copy of Closer to My Home. It's available on your website. I'm assuming you'll have those at the show if people want to pick up a copy of the record.
We'll have the CDs for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Mark, very much, and wish you safe travels and have a great day, man.
Hey, I appreciate it, Brother John. Thanks for having me on Iron City Rocks. Anytime you want me, I'm available. I appreciate you.
All right, up next is vocalist and keyboardist Amy Gould of the band Eden on Fire. Eden on Fire is a band hailing from Erie, Pennsylvania. I've been doing some touring in the Western PA, Ohio, New York area primarily, but they're going to be coming down to do a show on the 28th, that's a Saturday night, at the Broken Plow Western Martial Arts Center in Creighton, PA. That's just outside of Pittsburgh. So we'll have links to that on our website. The show is going to feature another Pittsburgh band, De Gregoria, on the line. So we wanted to get everyone aware of the show and check out Eden on Fire. So we're going to play you a little Eden on Fire, and then we'll get into that interview with Amy Gould.
Misfortune led to sorrow, almost one no tomorrow.
Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks from the band Eden on Fire. We have Amy Gould on the line. How you doing, Amy?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. You are going to be bringing in your band from sunny Erie, Pennsylvania, coming down to do a show on the 28th here at the Broken Plow Western Martial Arts Center, which I believe is right off 28 in Creighton, PA, which I still think of as Pittsburgh. Can you give us just a little bit of background on your band? I know you play keyboards. You're the voice, the kind of the visual part of the band. But the style of music, how do you categorize it? Is it power metal, symphonic metal, just metal metal?
So we're all over the place, but we fit most well into the symphonic melodic metal. We're kind of more old school power metal, not today's power metal so much, but you know, we get compared to like a new spin on like Judas Priest meets Dio. We have a lot of 80s influence in our sound, but it's new, so it's kind of a new spin on things. But we do have obviously a lot of piano work and keyboards. With me being the front woman, I play a lot and perform at the same time with that, but not every song, but that's sort of the realm of where we're at.
I like that. It instantly conjures up kind of the DOE keyboard sort of Rainbow in the Dark era of metal, where we could understand the singer and sing along. Challenges as a vocalist and as a keyboard player, piano player. I mean, I know, you know, right off the bat in some of these songs, the parts are pretty evident, but does that create a challenge for you as a vocalist?
As a vocalist, not as much. I've gotten used to singing and playing because, of course, I wrote the music. So it's not like I had to learn somebody else's stuff to sing along to.
Right.
I've been playing for a lot of years. I don't consider myself like a great piano player, but I get by. I can play my own stuff pretty well. What I think is the most challenging, though, is the performance aspect of it.
Right.
This is the first band that I've ever, I've played keyboards in like years and years ago when I was in high school, like in a rock band, but this is the first time I've actually played keyboards in my own original project. And that was a new challenge for me to figure out how to perform. I'm used to being out front all the time.
Right.
And in fact, when I first put the band together, I was trying to find somebody to replace me on the keyboards because I was writing it, but I thought, well, I can teach them to play it and I want to be out front. After some time, I really had difficulty finding somebody. Keyboard players, for one, are hard to find. And two, I found one extreme or the other. I found people who were classically trained pianists who wanted me to give them notation and sheet music.
Yeah.
Or I found the other extreme, which was, well, I can play chords on a synthesizer. So I needed that middle ground and I couldn't find it. So I finally said, you know what? I'm just going to do this. And now it's kind of our niche. We're one of the few, I think, that's doing that right now, at least in our region. So it's kind of given it a new aspect, but it can be challenging to perform behind those keyboards. I'm people that's all over the place on stage when I'm performing. I headbang a lot. I love to perform. So I had to kick it up a notch behind the keyboards.
Yeah. I mean, it does. You think about it, if you were a bass player, you know, guitar player, you have the ability to go stage left, stage right, you know, but you know, unless you want to bring out the dreaded keytar, you've got to be somewhat stationary, but still, as the singer, you're kind of where people's eyes are trained. I mean, that's just, it's kind of a natural from the, you know, the days we all grew up watching David Lee Roth, you know, is your eyes go to the guy on the mic. So it certainly got to add some challenges to that. When you write, and I believe you had said you do a lot of the writing, do you typically write piano and then bring it to the rest of the folks in the band to kind of work their parts around you? Or do you have kind of a, you know, in your audio workstation, you have a kind of an idea of, you know, here's what I want the guitar doing, here's what I want the bass doing. How do you kind of divide up that?
So originally, a lot of the tunes that are on our album that we released in November, I had written like complete songs using MIDI back in the day with my digital piano. So, but they were concepts. So I had an idea of what I wanted it to sound like. I do play some guitar, but I'm not like a great guitar player. So I have given creative liberty and freedom to the other instrumentalists in the band. And I said, make it your own, because to me, I don't have all the concepts for what the riff should sound like or what the drum beats, especially the drums. I'm totally out of my league there. So what you hear are redevelopments of the music that I wrote. Now, as we were writing new stuff together, what has happened is I will come up with a concept on piano lots of times and say, okay, this is what I want it to sound kind of like. Here's what the vocal line sounding like. Here's what the chord progression's like. Okay, now I don't want piano in this. So I've done that before.
Pull the rug
One
out.
song, Love Bomb, started out on piano, and I told them I had no intentions of there being piano in this song, but this is the rhythm, this is sort of the chord progression I'm thinking. It did change a little bit, but a lot of the essence of it was kept the same. So that's kind of how we approach it. We do have a different lineup now, but the past lineup when we were writing together, I did have, there's a couple songs on the album that the guitarist brought forth, and I had lyrics that I used and did the vocal lines for that. But a good bit of it was me developing and then bringing it and saying, okay, let's take this apart and redevelop it into something else now.
How far from where it was when it was in its infancy to, in any one of these songs, is that a difficult thing for you to listen to or to kind of come to terms with when a song evolves like that? I often wonder that, a songwriter has an idea in his head. This is what the song's going to sound like. And then you get collaborative efforts, reworkings, new parts, take parts out, and it becomes something different. It becomes more of a band creation. Is that something you enjoy watching it kind of blossom, or is it something you have to kind of take the perfectionist away and say, it's not just my song anymore?
Right. It's challenging. There's a lot of compromise that happens in the songwriting process, but not just on my end. There's been times where, I bring a song in and we talk about it and it ends up, the guitar player's like, well, I don't think we really need keyboards in this. I'm like, well, the song's gonna have keyboards in it. So, we kind of have to go back and forth a little bit, but nothing terrible, just a little bit of compromise that has to happen. So yeah, sometimes it's a painful process sometimes because
I can
you're like, this
imagine.
is what my song sounds like, and now you're taking it all apart and changing it. But in the end, the end product is always fabulous. So I'm always happy. I'm not willing to compromise things that I think are integral parts of a song. I'm willing to cut a verse if I have way too much in there, things like that. But I will say the one thing that I don't compromise is my lyrics. I look at that as that's my storytelling. That's mine. Nobody gets to say anything about that. I mean, if they have an idea like, hey, you should use this word instead of that word, it's a better fit, I'm cool with that. But I'm not going to change the essence of my lyrics. I say that to the guitar players as well when the solos are there. So I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, I don't like the way you're playing that. You should go here instead. That, no, that's their signature. That's their baby. So as long as they're playing in key.
Which is sometimes you get the no, I don't want to go down that path, but some guitarists don't even know what key they're playing in, but that's a different. But do you feel like when you listen to music, being that you write primarily in a keyboard, you can almost feel songs that aren't yours that were also written on keyboard? Like maybe it gives a different melodic angle than a song written on a guitar.
I do notice a lot of the keyboarding in songs. I Hailstorm is one that you will find. You can tell Lizzie Hale did a lot of the, especially the early writing, on keyboards, and she still does do some of that. But yeah, you do kind of pick up on some of it. You don't hear a lot of songs that are piano based like I do, I don't think. So mostly what I hear is keyboards added after the fact a lot of times, but there are those few instances. Like I said, Hailstorm's one that I've picked up on a little bit that you can tell she originally started there and it sort of evolved.
So I imagine it adds quite a dimensional shift to a song where, you bring up a great point where keyboards are kind of added as a production to thicken up the sound, or just to, it's almost like the cherry on the sundae, but it's not necessarily that the song was written that way. And sometimes I think that can make a big shift in how a song sounds. I was speaking with Russ Ballard, songwriter, who's written some of my favorite rock guitar songs, and he writes on piano. And I often wonder if that isn't what gives it some of the sense of melody and the flow of the song and such. You mentioned the lyrics and how personal that is for a singer. One song I can't help but ask about is "Parasite," and if that was a true story, and if you're still with that person,
Yeah,
because it
no, I
was.
am not. That was written in retrospect. So, no, you'll find a lot of all of my lyrics are true stories. I don't write fantasy stories. I just can't get into that. I mean, nothing, no offense to the power metal and like Led Zeppelin wrote all about Lord of the Rings, but I just can't get my brain around that. To me, it's to convey a real performance from me, I need to have it have feeling to me. So, yeah, everything Parasite is about an ex. I do talk about this often on interviews. I was in the music scene many, many years ago. Had a trajectory I was headed on in the metal scene, actually, out in Philadelphia region when I was a lot younger, and I met my ex, and he kind of over time took me out of that situation. So I was out of the music industry for a very, very long time. And I was doing local performance stuff. I sang with a classical choir. I did community theater and things like that. But in terms of rock, the only time I ever did that was at karaoke. And I just was not the same person. It was an abusive situation, especially emotionally abusive. And I just lost my everything, my whole identity. So you can kind of get that. If you listen to the song Fallen, you'll hear a lot of that as well. When I wrote that one, I told my mother before she listened to it, I said, listen, this is before. I'm just writing it in retrospect. It's not now. I don't feel like this anymore, but it's a pretty dark song. But it talks about all that as well.
It is when you're performing the songs, then does that do you kind of go into that headspace? I mean, you can certainly sense certain emotions in certain songs. When you perform them again, does it bring back some of that kind of pain, I guess, for maybe lack of a better word, or whatever it is,
More
whatever
so
emotion?
anger. I channel the anger more than anything else, probably if I'm performing. I'm also really good at turning things off and on for performances as well. I think if I let it get too much, I do actually diagnosably have PTSD from the last relationship. So I don't want to go too far there. We don't want to see any of that. Wake the Monster is a true story. So that is about me being triggered. So, yeah, I do channel the anger a lot, and a lot of times it's empowerment. Like I feel empowered. We have a song, Make Me Bleed, that's about that situation that I feel empowered when I sing it. Even Parasite, because Parasite is really, I'm not letting you do it this to me anymore. So I've taken back the power. I do have quite a few songs about that, and not all of them are about relationships. Some of them have been about some drama that I've experienced being a musician in the local scene and people being just downright mean. So I've gotten angry and sort of came back with, we have a song called Villain that is not on the album, but hopefully it'll be on our next album. And the tagline is, I am the villain you made. And a friend of mine who's also a musician said to me one time, we were talking about all this craziness that goes on, and he was like, Amy, you're the villain that they made. And I went, song. So I went home and wrote it,
Yeah, it's a
and
song title. Yep, got it. So the performance you're going to be doing on the 28th, I believe it is, mostly the Unresolved album, or will you work some of this new material into the set?
we will have a couple of the new ones in there. We have two songs right now that we're doing that are newer. I did have a total changeover of a lineup at the beginning of the year. And so they're still kind of playing catch up. So we've only added two of the newer songs. to our repertoire so far. So we'll only be doing two, and Villain is one of them, and there's another one called Queen Bee, and that's also about drama that I experienced as well. So we will add those, and then we will be doing the full album as well.
The full album. Do you guys do covers in the set? I wasn't sure how
So
long the set was.
we do. We added a Hailstorm cover actually to
Okay.
open the show. There's a song from her newer album, from their newer album called "Raise Your Horns." It's all piano and just Lizzie Hale singing, and it's a pretty cool anthem type song, and it's a
Right.
really cool way to start the show. So that's what we've been doing is our longer shows. We start with that, and then we go into our music. And then we also recently did a mashup with a Metallica song with one of our songs. So I'm not sure if we're going to do that one yet or not, but it was pretty cool when we did it. So we might try that again. So threw Enter
Captive
Sandman
audience.
in the middle of a song. So
That'd work. I know D. Gregorio on the bill that night. Will you have physical copies for those? I mean, they want to pick up CDs, or I don't know if you do vinyl.
we do have some limited CDs available still. So we'll have those for sale along with our merch at our merch table. So they'll
Okay.
be, yep, they can pick up a copy.
Okay. And for folks outside, I know this show, if I recall correctly, is the only one on the schedule at the moment. But do you guys have plans for other shows this summer?
We do. July 12th, we will be here in Erie at a place called the Rathskeller.
Okay.
It's one of our home bases here, one of our favorite places to play in Erie. So we'll be doing a local show. And then right now we're sort of waiting to hear back on a couple of things. We did just hire a booking agent. So we're working with them right now on getting some other things in place. But we're also going to be playing in Erie again, downtown Erie. They do a concert series here,
Okay.
summer concerts in the square. And that is, and I'm going to guess on the date, it's a Thursday. And I think that's the 24th of July. It's somewhere around.
Okay.
So
Okay.
we'll be downtown Erie for that one. So that's kind of exciting because that'll be a fun one.
Yeah, this is the good time of year to drive to Erie as opposed to the 6 months of the year where it seems like it's snowing.
Yeah, and we almost won the snow globe this year for the most snow. Syracuse, New York beat us out of the entire nation. We had
Yeah.
so much snow. It was crazy this year.
It's amazing, yeah, how much just those, couple hundred miles make such a big difference in the snow totals. Now, do you guys do like some other regional shows in other cities, like historically in the past, or do you see yourself doing Buffalo? And you mentioned Syracuse, which is a great metal town,
We have started to
Rochester.
branch out. Yeah, we've played in New York, we've played in Buffalo, Niagara Falls, and Jamestown.
Okay.
And we've played in Cleveland a couple of times, in the Cleveland region a couple of times, and Akron, and Akron, Ohio.
Yeah.
And we've been down to Virginia
Okay.
and played in Winchester, Virginia a couple of times. And then we've also been out to Eastern Pennsylvania and played over in York. So we're trying to branch out a little bit more. That's
Yeah.
why I got a booking agent, because for me, trying to
Yeah,
find the
call
right
all those
venues,
places.
and
Yeah.
yeah, I it's a lot. So we're trying to also try to get on like maybe some opening situations for
Yeah.
some bigger acts and stuff. So that's our goal right now.
Yeah, you slot in with the right style of band, and that's a great opportunity for a band like yours. Well, we look forward to seeing you the 28th. That is, again, that's going to be here in Creighton, PA, with De Gregorio. Look forward to the new material, and for those who want to pick up a copy of the first album, it's available now. And I want to thank you so much for your time today, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this.
All right, that about wraps up this episode of Iron City Rocks. I want to thank Amy Gould of Eden on Fire. Again, they'll be coming in to do a show on the 28th. We'll have information if you head over to Iron City Rocks and go to the episode 557 notes. We'll have the link to tickets. If you're not familiar with the venue, we'll have all the information you need to come check them out. And again, want to thank legendary Mark Farner for coming on the show and talking about his newest record, Closer to My Home, and probably more urgent and time sensitive, his show on the 26th at Gerald's Rhythm Grill in Warrendale. Be great to see him come out and do that show. So check both of those out again, ironcityrocks.com. You can go to the show notes for episode 557 and get information for tickets for both shows, or if you want to pick up these great new albums from both of these bands, so you're ready for the show next week. I also invite you to check us out on our social media. They are all Iron City Rocks. And our email is ironcityrocks@gmail.com. If you've got a band that's interesting to you that you think others may need to learn more about, let us know. You have bands that you're not so crazy about that you hear on the show, let us know. We'd love to hear any and all feedback from you guys on what you like and what you don't like. And most importantly, we want to thank you for taking the time to listen, and we'll talk to you next time.